You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg and to David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, sometimes in Johannesburg, but at the moment in New York and very soon to be in Boston. Viv, I've got to start with you because something happened this morning which ignited markets, and that was a China stimulus package, which we knew was going to happen. We didn't know the extent of it, but can it last, Viv? Because it's done a few good things. It's taken people by surprise.
Yeah, look, I would always say that this is basically like giving somebody adrenaline when they have a broken leg. It's going to help, you know, ease the pain and make everything better in the short term. But, you know, it's not going to really solve the real problem. And I've talked about this, I think, a number of times on this show.
Yes.
Where the problem with China is that they have, look, in the U.S., you can have Biden, you can have Trump, you can have, you know, Joe Schmo off the street running the U.S. economy, the U.S. Government. It really doesn't matter. The underlying entrepreneurs of the U.S. are not scared of whoever is in charge. You know what I mean? Elon Musk will make fun of Joe Biden because they'll make fun of Trump when basically he's in power. It doesn't really matter. But in China, it's different. When you offend Xi Jinping, you basically disappear for 3 months and come back and give up your company and go and teach English, I think, in Japan, like Jack Ma did. You don't get a chance to basically get the disapproval of the premier without having some consequences. And the problem is in China is that the person running the country at the moment seems to have gained a lot of political power, but he doesn't seem to have the competence to run the rest of the economy. And I think that is the real underlying issue in China. Is for those that don't know, he's changed the way the Chinese economy, sorry, government has worked for the last several decades. It used to be you take two terms. The first term, you are basically in charge. The second term, you have almost a deputy that's going to be the next leader. And then when you retire after two terms, he has one term as in charge, and then there's a deputy that will be the follow-on leader. He has stopped doing that. So this is his third term. He's totally removed all kind of opposition to him. And in fact, he's basically
a dictator.
Gone out and made sure this. Yeah, they're all gone. And so basically, he's in charge and he doesn't seem to know how to operate this economy. It's more control, less startups. The startup numbers in China are absolutely shocking. So yes, all these things in terms of stimulus, good for the market in the short term. Long term, the Chinese economy in very big trouble.
Okay. And David, I'll bring you in on this one before we get to America and politics, because I've spoken to a couple of people over the last couple of days, and one person, and I'm going to mention his name, Magnus Haystack, who's been, he's a slightly controversial figure, but I like him, and I like the way he talks because I understand him. There are several people in my podcasting life. There's Viv Govender, there's David Shapiro, there's Wayne McCurry, and there's Magnus Haystack, and there are a few others, but they talk sense and I can understand them. And if they were salesmen, and I'm including you two here, I would say, okay, where do I sign? Who do I make the check out to? Because you make so much sense. And he has suddenly gone from 12 years of being underweight SA equities to saying, maybe we should be looking to shift a little bit. Yeah, I interviewed him today, and he's controversial because he speaks his mind. But David, if there is a stimulus in China, and if they have run down their stockpiles of commodities, and if the economy does do better and they need to replenish those stockpiles, then it's so good for South Africa. And look at the rand, for goodness sake. So tell me.
Well, you don't have to buy South Africa. You can buy commodities. You can buy global commodities. Glencore doesn't operate in South Africa. BHP doesn't operate in South Africa. Anglo's very little. Mm. So, I mean, you don't have to buy South Africa.
But if they're cheap, David, then
I'm with you. I'm saying you don't have to. That's not South Africa. You're buying commodities. You reckon there's going to be a turnaround in the commodity market. There are hundreds of commodity companies around the world. So we get this distorted view of our market, you know, that this is the place to be. First of all, you've got to then make a decision on platinum, and you've got to make a decision on iron ore. Yes, Kumba's very cheap. But, I mean, if he's, you know, if he says, look, I'm going to nibble at some of the commodity markets, I can buy that. You know, I can buy that he might be taking a position in Billiton, but that's a global position. That's not buying SA Inc. That's not buying our economy, which is still, I think, under enormous pressure because structurally, it's been knocked for 30 years. You know, there's so much work that has to be done. So I think you've got to differentiate the two. You know, if he's going to buy, does he want to buy British American tobacco? You know, does he think that that's going to benefit? Or a booze company, you know, AB InBev. So I think just be careful about getting too optimistic on, I'm not knocking South Africa, I'm saying, but it's a certain area that could benefit if China does decide to, to pull all the levers.
Just to clarify, he wasn't saying go out and buy South Africa. He said that maybe he's starting to look at it, and he didn't mention particular stocks. He did say mid caps, but didn't go through them. He just said that he and his company are looking at it. So don't think that I'm saying that Magnus Haystack has gone out with Brinthurst Wealth and his clients to do it. He's not doing that. Viv, do you agree with what David said?
To some extent, I mean, in the short term, I think there's, we forget how far back we've lagged versus everyone else in the world. We're like amazed that we are able to produce electricity every day at the moment. You know what I mean? Load shedding daily. Yet every single country in the world that has a semi-functioning government is able to do this, right? I honestly do believe it doesn't take a lot to really make South Africa a lot more attractive than it is right now. I don't think it can solve the long-term problems of unemployment and so on, but having a significant, you know, really big boost up in terms of things like, you know, the local economy, employment, et cetera, not to the point at which we're going to be like sub 10% like we should be, is doable. If we just get things in order. But, you know, just today, speaking of this year, I don't know if you guys saw yet another ridiculous issue we had with the GNU. Yet another mayor has been kicked out by the ANC, Alliance DA mayor in Tshwane has been kicked out. I think the Mashaba's guys turned against him. And the vulnerability in this country because of the GNU, which is pretty much what's been holding up the economy or the market right now, what's been holding a lot of optimism, even the Rand, I think, is benefiting from it. That is such a vulnerable thing. So, yes, I think we could solve problems, but the risk in South Africa remains too high for the moment, I think.
We punch way above our weight. You know what I mean? We go to the UN and Cyril gets on top there as though he's a leader of an economy of the whole of Africa. You know, Lindsay, yes. Africa is 48 to 50, I can't remember, I keep losing count, how many nations there are in sub-Saharan Africa. You know, not one of them is a true democracy.
That is a huge problem, David, I have to say.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
So you can't look at Africa in one, say, oh, Africa is a wonderful. No, it's made up of 50 different nations. Every one of those countries has got its own culture, it's got its own rules. It's got its own backhand rules. It's got its own cops. It's got a, you know, and in many cases, yes, certainly the areas are filled with commodities which are worth mining. But when you go into mine there, you better go with your own army. Otherwise, you're not going to come out alive. So you have to actually get your own militia to survive. So, yeah. You know, I can never understand this. If you go to America, you know, from San Diego all the way up to New Hampshire, it's one country.
No. Now you're talking nonsense, David. I'm sorry. The nonsense is too. You can go to one state and have an abortion because you've been raped by your troglodyte uncle or something, and you can go to another one, and you won't be allowed to do that. So America, let's face it, is as fragmented, not quite as badly as Africa is, but it's not perfect. We'll come to that in a moment. But anyway, I'm making a case for South Africa now. PPI came out at 2.8%. Today, CPI is below the midpoint of 4.5%. Load shedding hasn't been a factor in life across the country for 6 months. David, you've had localized load shedding because of.
You've got to believe it.
Exactly.
and water shedding as well.
The government of national unity may not be perfect, but it's a step in the right direction. Commodity prices starting to do well because of the weak dollar. Interest rates coming down. And the China story. So there are a few things that you wouldn't have been able to say a year ago. And when you talk about America being one country, David, it's not one country. We can see that. How can a country that is one country vote, 40% of the population that can vote, or 45%, whatever it is, can vote for someone who is as loathsome as Donald Trump? David, all right, I invite your comment now.
We're going to talk about that in a second.
Yes, we will.
It's thrilling. I mean, it's wonderful to watch.
I love it.
What I am saying is that in San Diego, you can use a dollar, and in New Hampshire, you use a dollar. You know, it's one currency. It's one economy.
It's very true.
They're different cultures. But I'm saying in Africa, every country is different, you know, with its own set of regulations, rules, whatever it is. Yes, you've got state law and you've got federal law in the United States, but it's homogeneous, almost like South America's the same thing. One, you know, if you look other than Brazil, Brazil's Portuguese, I think all the other nations are Spanish speaking. So there is kind of a commonality amongst them, but in Africa, it's all over the place. But, every it's so difficult to coordinate it. I must say that I find the same way about India, even though it's one massive continent. It also seems to be very fragmented in attitudes and difficult to kind of get a grip on it. But that's my worry about, and I'm thrilled that we're starting to see a turnaround in South Africa. Yes. That things are looking better. But, you know, 30 years of neglect is not going to correct itself in a short time. It needs effort. And I think Viv brought up a very important point with the mayor of Tshwane or Pretoria. Nobody wants to rule for the common good. We all want to rule for power. You know, there seems to be, that's all they're interested in. You know, it's all about power, power, power. And until you can get some kind of government that's going to say, look, we need to, and I want to get on to a point now, which I think is quite important. You need to get this country going. When I walk around here in America and I look at the opportunities and I look, you know, Lindsay, we don't need commodities. You need to have the factors of production or the productive resources to grow your country and to keep in touch with what's happening.
Yeah, but Viv, let's bring Viv in here now, because you've spoken before about the tax implications of commodities going up and therefore the price of commodity companies on the JSE going up and then paying more taxes. So that's part of the whole thing. And Viv, David was not disparaging about Africa, but realistic about Africa. And I came in with the, well, look at America, how fragmented that is. And I can almost hear you listening intently. If you could hear someone listen, you would have been shouting at us. What do you make of it all?
Well, I think this is something actually I did follow more in my academic career. But you have to understand that most of the colonial countries are not actually countries. Even India is not a country in the normal sense. So, for instance, France is full of French people. Germany is full of German people. India, you say in brackets, is full of Indian people, but they're very different people. Like North Indians speak a language that is more similar to English than it is to South Indian languages. That's how different it is. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's divided India, and they were never one country until they were colonized by the British. It's like saying Europe is one country because they're all European. But in reality, the Germans and the French were never fighting them, were never basically, you know, one country French, ever. Yeah. And so the thing with the U.S. as well is that this is a danger in the U.S. So the U.S. was one country when it was a white Christian country. And the identity that identified the U.S. was a white Christian identity. And now that we came to minority, you know, what's called the majority U.S., meaning that there's going to be like no single, group that's going to be the majority in that country. What you're going to have to deal with is the fact that there's never been a single large democracy that has not been, majority of a single ethnicity. It is a very, very weird thing. And obviously we like to live in a world where things are going to be, you know, hunky dory and so going forward. But I'm sitting right now, you go forward, like, you know, a couple, you know, decades into the future, you're going to have this fragmentation in the U.S. Unless they can find some other identity to fuse them together, it's going to be, you know, not very good. And the example I would put forward is India. The method that Modi in India is trying to fuse to get an identity in India is he's using religion.
Yes.
So he's trying to fuse a Hindu identity in India. And you can see the downside of that.
Is there, just before you go on, is there religious or faith apartheid in India at the moment, the way that he seems to be portrayed, and certainly in the Western media, as very anti-Muslim? Please be honest here, Viv.
He is anti-Muslim. I mean, you don't preside over the murder of, I think, 2,000 plus Muslims when you're running a province, unless you basically are not very, there's issues. You know what I mean? 2,000 people murdered under your watch. That is a lot of people. Mm. Okay. And he was banned, remember, from traveling for many years until he became prime minister. So that is that. But the thing is that the only way for him, the only reason that he's really taking power in India against the Congress, which used to be the guys that were, you know, we basically went and freed you from the British, and therefore we run the country. The way he was able to fuse all these different regional parties was by saying, no, you're not just this Gujarati, you're not from Maharashtra, you're not from UP, you're a Hindu. And that is how he forged this Hindu identity, okay? And that is how he's doing things there. And it makes me worry about South Africa as well, because the thing about the ANC, for all its negativity, is a South African party. But what are we seeing rising right now? Regional tribal parties. You see what I mean? And that is the danger that happens when you have, you know, no single cultural identity across the entire country. And the danger that we are seeing in the U.S. as well is that that's why we're having the rise of people like J.D. Vance and so on. It's because you're getting kind of like an attempted power or a route to power that goes through ethnicity, which is the worst thing to do. It's a very dangerous thing. It's been tried many times in the past and always ends a tragedy. And we are seeing it happen in the U.S. right now. And we are seeing, like even in South Africa, I think the danger of like thinking that the MK is not Jacob Zuma, is that you are trying to get a party based on ethnicity or building a party based on ethnicity, which is, you know, a terrible thing in a country like South Africa.
David, gosh, lots to think about there. A great analysis, yeah. By the way, Viv. David, let's talk about the fascination that both you and I have about the US election process. We're coming down to the last few dozen days of this thing. It's quite incredible. And I saw Kamala Harris talking, I think it was last night. She doesn't come across as very well-versed when it comes to the economy. She doesn't look convincing to me, and that worries me.
When it comes to the economy, Trump's ahead.
Mm.
There's no doubt about it. And, some of his policies are still repugnant. I mean, just imposing taxes on or tariffs and the cost of that on the economy is enormous, because at the end of the day, the consumer pays.
Yeah.
if you put up charges, you're not going to change, and suddenly go all America. So there's a lot of criticism about it, but he's far more in touch with it. And I must tell you, 80% of today's news is around the election, whether it's ABC, CBS, Fox, wherever you go, all with different views. She's ahead. She's ahead in many areas, particularly where it comes to women, where she's probably 50-36, and so there are gaps emerging. But I think her weakness, and I think a lot of people recognize it, is on the point that you made, is on the economy. She was a prosecutor. She was a lawyer. I don't think she's got a feel for the economy. And it's something where if she does come into power, she's going to have to obviously appoint some pretty powerful people around her to help explain and to educate her. But that is her soft underbelly, is the economy. And I don't think Trump's taking full advantage of it.
No, well, I think he is, but he can't help himself, you see. I think Viv will agree with us here. And Viv, he can't. If you, Viv, wrote a speech for Trump and said, right, we're going to focus on tariffs, and you can explain why sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. John Deere is making farming equipment in Mexico, and we're going to put a 200% tariff on it. You would go through it methodically with him and say, you can't really do that, Mr. Trump. It sounds good to some farmer from Iowa or something, or from somewhere in the Midwest, but you can't do that. He would look at that speech, and after 5 minutes, he would throw it away and say, they're eating animals in Ohio. They're eating dogs and cats in Springfield. So what is your assessment of what's going on? I think the Harris debate momentum has slowly been eroded in the last 2-3 weeks.
I think that's pretty clear, and I think Trump knows that as well, and that is why he's not doing the second debate, because he knows it didn't help him at all. It doesn't make sense for him to do another debate. And here's the thing as well. I mean, I think right now, looking at the polls, Trump is probably better in these polls, even though he's trailing by Harris by a lot, than he was in 2020 or 2016 by pollsters, if you think about it. If you look at what his odds were back then, you know, back in 2020, 2016 and so on, you would find that he's actually now, at this point in time, doing better than he was back then. Okay. The question arises is that have they adjusted polls well enough in the last, let us say, since the last cycle to predictably kind of compensate for what has been significant undercounting of his, popularity. So in terms of the polling, I don't know. If the polls have adjusted, then you are seeing, Harris probably has a slightly better chance, not a 75-25 chance, but probably like a 55-60% chance to 45-40. If they haven't, then I would say he's actually ahead, because the last time the polls were ridiculous. I mean, the CNN poll was, I think, 8% undercounting his support, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you look back in 2016, they had a 99% chance, some pollsters, that, Hillary was going to win. And, less than a 1% chance that he was going to win. It was really undercounting his support. And so that's the one thing. The second thing to understand is that, you know, when it comes to the U.S., historically, if you look at just how they behave, and I saw somebody talk about this recently, and I thought it was very interesting. I went back and looked at it, and it's true, that the U.S. president can do pretty much just one thing in his entire term. There's like one shot to do one thing in his entire term before gridlock just shuts down any kind of initiative. Clinton did one thing, Obama did one thing, Bush did like one thing, you know, Biden does that, done one thing, Trump has done one thing. And the real power of the politicians like Bush and the president, is actually in foreign policy. That's the one area the president can do stuff. You know what I mean? And I think that is the real thing to be concerned about going forward, is that what does Trump do as a politician in the current global environment? People might say he's not going to be as belligerent against Russia. True, but he might be more against China, which is a far bigger threat. He might not be wishy-washy on, Israel, but there's other stuff he wants to do in the in South America that does seem to be a bit more aggressive than, you know, something in the past. Some stuff he wants to do around NATO, and those are things that he can really make a difference on. Especially when you consider the fact that J.D. Vance, who's very different from Mike Pence, people make jokes about him and stuff. That guy's history is he was in the military. He went to, I think, one of the Ivy League schools. He came from, like, being dirt poor in the U.S. So he's obviously got some talent. And he's going to have a huge impact, I think, in foreign policy. I think that's going to be the big impact of the Trump thing. So that's my little kind of Trump thing there. But, yeah, this election...
People don't want Trump. You know, people don't want Trump. And you can pick that up here.
In New York.
Scotty's followers, well...
Yeah, it's a good point, Viv and David. And we've always said that, yeah. You're not in America, David. You're in New York and Boston.
That is a point. But there's still... It does represent probably the eastern states and the western states, you know. They still have a very powerful voice. And even in other areas, you know, the undecided voter, I don't think they want Trump. You know, they're tired of it. And I always say...
The polls have to adjust for that.
The point that I made was that even Taylor Swift, you know, in a little tweet, she just said, you know, we're tired of this chaos. And I think to an extent, if I could sum it up, I think people in America are tired of the kind of chaos. You know, they want stability in their lives, not someone who's as divisive as Trump, you know, who gets up there and makes this hate speech. America's been torn apart by hate. You know, there's wherever you go, you know, there's this hatred, and you've got to get some conciliatory force in this country to try and steady it down.
The interesting comment that I saw, sorry to interrupt you, David, but it's very important because you mentioned the word hate, is that he campaigns on hate and fear, Kamala Harris campaigns on hope and optimism for the future. So you've got hate versus love, essentially. I mean, it's a hippie thing for me to say, but it is essentially that. And as soon as people sit down and realize that is it, I mean, you never see Trump smile.
But you see Kamala Harris smiling and laughing and everything, but Trump is just like, fight, 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 and he's got this aggressive, screwed-up face. And it's... I find it quite offensive, and it's not upsetting, but it certainly makes me gnash my teeth a bit.
Yeah. Now, well, you've summed it up very nicely. It's exactly like that. And I think the majority of people, you do get those, what do you call them, not disenfranchised, there's a word that I want to use, disaffected part of the population, you know, that feel that life has just left them by, and they feel anger in their souls, and they want to vent it, and they vent it because they find some hope in Trump, you know, for whatever it is. And I think you've got to get around that. You know, there's so many issues. You know, the strange thing is that I know that October the 7th is coming up, and I don't know what's planned there, but I haven't seen any protests of it. It is UN time now. Believe me, you can't believe the traffic, and you cannot believe, you know, what's happening in the city. I mean, there's a huge number of dignitaries here and so on. But I haven't seen any trouble. I've seen no protests, no posters, nothing. It's just, you know, you go into Central Park, and it's really nirvana. It's clean. It's quiet. People are just getting on their lives. And I think that represents what they really want. Just get on with your life, you know. They don't want trouble at universities. They don't want these outpourings of hatred against one group. So I get a feeling just being around here that no one's really walking around with MAGA caps or anything like that and you know, wanting to change things.
Yeah, I saw a lovely hat the other day, make prison great again, and it was orange and ended. I'm going to give you a couple of prices now. I'm not going to go through all of them because our conversation is far too fascinating to do that. But today, Prosus up 7.5% on the JSE, Richemont up 6.7%, luxury goods company. David, they must have done well in Europe as well. Naspers up 6.75%, Anglo-American Platinum up 5.5%, Anglo's up 5.3%, all linked to China. Downside, Sasol down 7.4%. Maybe that's an ex-div story, I don't know. Telkom down 2.3%, Ranet down 2.1%, Redefine down nearly 2%, Pick and Pay down 1.5%. The Rand doing so well at 17.18. Viv, we've got to move now to a chap. I mean, if I make a list of people I don't like, Zuckerberg is he's on the list. And he's launched these new glasses last night, Viv. I mean, okay, they're prototypes. They're AI glasses. And he wants the world not to have a cell phone, mobile phone stuck to their ear. He wants you to have a pair of glasses on your nose in the future. What do you make of this? Is it another metaverse underwhelming announcement?
So you're not buying the Zuckerberg glow up. That is something that's happened, by the way, in the last couple of years. Have you seen that? Zuckerberg is now very popular.
Oh, really?
He's considered to be cool. In fact, the shirt he wore yesterday pretty much said, all Zuck or nothing.
That big baggy thing he was wearing with his new curly hair.
The shirt he was wearing at that presentation, I think it was in German or something, said all Zuck or nothing. Okay? Anyway, so yeah, he does believe that the new form factor is going to be your glasses. The reason being is that he thinks AI is going to be such a universal part of your life that you don't want to ever be without it, which means that you don't want to be even as disconnected as we are to our cell phones. Can you imagine that? The amount of screen time we have in our cell phones is not enough for Zuckerberg's mind. We have to have it all the time on. And here's the scary part, right? He is doing a business model right now that is actually very, very powerful. What he's done is he's gone out and he's destroyed the business models of places like OpenAI and Gemini, whoever they're talking about, because what he's done is he's given away the treasury for free. OpenAI is building an LLM. Zuckerberg is building an LLM. OpenAI charges you $20 a month. Zuckerberg gives it to you for nothing, right? No matter, if you're slightly worse than somebody else, but your stuff is free, you're probably going to win, okay? Number one. Number two, he is pivoting on an incredible stage. So like Gemini has all these problems, you know, about, you know, the African-American kind of Nazis and that kind of stuff. When you ask for a picture of a Nazi, they give you like a variety of different races and so on. It's because there's so much bureaucracy inside Google. What Zuckerberg has done is, because he still runs the company, has his super voting shares. That means whatever he says at Meta goes. In fact, he basically caused the glasses to be built in 1 week. When he said, I like these new LLMs, only these glasses, it was done in 1 week. And he's pivoting towards the stuff in an incredible way. But here's the thing. he seems to have a team that can build the stuff. I don't know what it is with AI, but everybody has a team that can build the stuff. OpenAI has one, Gemini has one, Grok, Elon Musk has one, and Zuckerberg has one. And his latest version of Llama can see stuff, can hear stuff, so it has multimodality. You put that in a pair of glasses, and you can imagine just walking around a city where you have basically the virtual assistant that can, in the prototype version, which is obviously not released to the public yet, could show you, like, you know, these people's names in front of you, can translate any language immediately to English in front of you. It is a superpower. If it can work, it's amazing.
Yeah, but you've got to have a pair of glasses on your nose. And what happens if there's a dog or a cat walking in front of you and you want to tickle the dog or the cat? It's not real. David, you and I are probably less enlightened when it comes to actually wearing the tech. You're very good at investing in tech, but you're not going to wear it, are you? You're not going to have glasses on your nose all day, are you, when you're running in Central Park or in Call It Drive in Johannesburg? Please tell me you won't. Please, I beg you.
I wear sunglasses, I mean, to protect my eyes, but... Yes. I don't know. The possibilities are enormous. I mean,
oh God, I've got to get a simpler life. I really have. I've got to stop talking to you too. My brain's frying already.
I must, to bring you back to reality. I think yesterday I went to a show called Stereophonic, and Broadway's packed. I must tell you, Broadway's come back, and not only is it packed, it's expensive, but It's come back in a big way, which is also giving an indication of how the economy is going and how people are returning to life. But Viv, I don't know if you were ever a Fleetwood Mac fan.
Oh, yeah, huge fan.
Rumors.
Okay. Rumors, yeah. And this is a play. They've changed the names, I think, obviously, for obvious reasons. But it's about the production of Rumors, you know, in the studio. the conflicts of the couple, you know, there was Lindsay Buckingham, Stevie Nicks. So they've all got
They were having affairs and one was breaking up, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a huge thing in the 70s, of course.
It's an absolutely magnificent production. The beauty is that the actors actually play the instruments and they produce the incredible – it's not a musical by far, you know, not by far – only a few songs, but they reproduce songs which sound very similar to the Rumor songs on stage in the production, you know, in a studio and that. But it's incredible, and it just takes you back to that age of the 70s where things were a lot more simple.
Was that you bringing us back down to earth, or rather bringing me back down to earth, David?
Yes.
Where
there were no cell phones, you know, the telephone rang and they never had the fancy production units or the digital units that they have here. But for fans of old rock and roll, this is it was a wonderful production. It is winning a lot of Tonys and that, but credit to the actors and the talent of these people.
Especially the young people know who it is, because I was listening to somebody's talk recently and they do not know, one of the youngsters in the office, did not know who Clint Eastwood was.
There's no one in the world that doesn't know who Clint Eastwood is. I mean, the outlaw Josie Wales, come on now.
What has Clint Eastwood done since the year 2000?
Well, he's 87 years old, Viv. I mean, what do you do when you're in your 80s? The last film he did, I think, that was any good was the film where he lived next door to the Korean family. It was called Gran Torino, I think, wasn't it? The one where he was the drug mule as well.
Yeah.
That was another one. He's fantastic. Everyone knows who Clint Eastwood is. And
youngsters don't.
They don't know the Second World War. They have no idea. They have no idea.
And, they don't know the Rolling Stones.
No. They know absolutely nothing. I was just talking to some youngsters in the office today, and I said, did you know Fleetwood Mac? No idea. Anyway, I must tell you, the good news, though, is in the concert on the park across the road from where I stay is Doja Cat on Saturday and Post Malone.
South African.
Post Malone, yeah.
Well, you've lost me there, David.
I know her dad is. I think her dad's South African. Yeah,
Her dad's South African. He was in it's called that South African thing with Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. So
Serafina. Anyway.
So there's a big concert here in the park. On it's an annual concert for global citizens and that. But so I've I'm still looking at tickets. They're
$500.
$100. Nah, $120. You just stand around and watch screens and everything.
Okay. Have fun. Thanks for bringing us down to earth. That was analog David Shapiro from Sasson Securities in New York and Zuckerberg fan Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg. Fascinating chat, gentlemen. Thank you very much. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.